From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world, so keep it tuned right here. Well, I've really been looking forward to this hour because, well, I told you before, we're going to be discussing a fascinating topic, mysteries over martinis. And our guest is Lisa Lloyd. Now, she was born and raised in Iowa City, Iowa, and her fascination with mysteries began at an early age. Her favorite pastime was telling stories, maybe playing Clue, even searching cornfields for crop circles, and occasionally helping Scooby-Doo and the gang solve mysteries. And in fact, when the television show Unsolved Mysteries debuted, it sort of opened her eyes to a variety of unusual phenomena. But as time went on, several of her family members passed, and that piqued her interest in life after death. She started experimenting with Ouija boards as a young adult. She even had some profound experiences with that we're going to talk to her about. But in 2006, she was struck with a sudden illness that landed her in the intensive care unit, and this resulted in a near-death experience, which thrust her into a world of strange phenomena and made her a magnet for people who are a part of it. This happens a lot, you know. Those occurrences escalated over time, and now she is the creator of this very popular blog, which you can learn more about at mysteriesovermartinis.com. Lisa Lloyd, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Thank you, Joshua. It's a pleasure being on.
Well, it's really a wonderful topic and a great angle that you're taking. And let me just ask you right off the bat, Lisa, when you had your near-death experience, what did you experience?
Sure. Well, I actually had the privilege of seeing the well-famed white light that everyone talks about. Unfortunately, I did not hear voices. I didn't see any family members who had crossed over or anything like that. But just to give you a little background, I was very ill and in the intensive care unit, like you had mentioned, and going through some very horrific tests. I've just in a lot of pain of having basically all my organs were shutting down at this point. And I was really just struggling. And it was like all of a sudden, everything went dark. And I remember thinking, oh, the doctors gave me something to calm me down. This is wonderful. And all of a sudden, I found myself surrounded by this white golden light, and I felt no pain. I remember it just being the most euphoric moment I'd ever experienced. And just as much as I was starting to engulf myself in this light and just feel amazing, as soon as I had entered it, I was literally physically pulled out of it. And I woke up back in pain, watching doctors run around and scurry about. So it was a pretty amazing experience.
You know, Lisa, when I've talked to other people who have had that kind of experience, they usually say that it alleviates any fear of death, and it really gives them a much more positive attitude about life and death in general. Did it affect you that way?
100%, yes. I have no fear of death now. And before, I wouldn't say it consumed me, but I definitely had a fear, you know, of what was to come. But no, that fear is gone.
And so, and of course, this was after you'd already had some pretty interesting experiences in your life. You know that you were playing around with Ouija boards at one point in your life, and that gave you an idea that maybe there was more to life than meets the eye. What happened to you?
Correct. Well, my mother is the youngest of 14 kids, so it's a very large family. But it's also a very close family. And within a span of just a few years, there were several of her siblings, a sister-in-law, and a grandfather figure who had all passed. And my mother, her sister, and then two of her daughters and me, so my aunt and two cousins and I all took a little trip up to Lake Okoboji, which is a lake here in Iowa. And we were just, you know, having a couple cocktails. We had gone boating, and my cousin pulled out a Ouija board. She's like, well, wouldn't this be fun? And it was really just going into it thinking, this is just going to be something entertaining and fun. And then, you know, as we started playing with it, it was kind of just gibberish at first. And then it started to, you know, say, you know, hello, and we're like, oh, do we have a spirit here? And it progressed to be who the spirit claimed to be, my grandmother, who had passed in 1968. And my cousin and I really were the only two using the planchette, so we really didn't know a lot about her because she had died so, you know, so much longer before we ever came along. And she ended up giving us her death date. She gave us the year she was born. You know, just said she was proud of her babies, which would be my mom and aunt who were there. You know, and at first it was like, okay, is this just kind of a psychological thing? Are we kind of creating this? And then she said goodbye and said that my aunt who had passed wanted to step forward. And we thought, okay, well, that's kind of cool. And it was weird because not only were we getting different information at this point, but the feeling and the flow of the energy of the planchette had changed. What went from being very subtle but very correct went to kind of having a little trouble spelling words out, but she was swearing like she would in real life, and she was just very quick-witted, and it was more of a sharp motion with the planchette, which we didn't really expect. And then from her moving forward was an uncle who came through, and it was very, very soft again. He was very long-winded and very gentle soul. And that's kind of how the energy flow was. And he actually went through and told us about what happened leading up to his death, which none of us knew. And we were able to confirm that later. So it was very profound for us because there was information given that none of us knew.
You know, I'm interested in this idea that people who have these kinds of experiences actually do sort of become, as you say, magnets for other people who have some similar experience or interest. How would you explain that phenomenon and how it sort of evolved for you?
Well, I think for me, I've always been pretty vocal. I mean, I don't advertise that I've had these experiences, but I certainly am not close to sharing it. So I think that being open to it and being sensitive to it as well, not necessarily psychically sensitive, but just being, you know, if someone's telling me a story, I'm not going to shut them down. So I think that I kind of opened up in that respect, that people felt comfortable coming to me with their stories. Or, you know, they would come to me asking, you know, well, I had something similar to what you had, you know. And then so in wanting to help them understand what their experience might have been, you know, I'd find myself researching more of that subject or listening to more podcasts or, you know, I just tried to find any knowledge I could because I genuinely wanted to help people try to at least grasp or make sense of whatever it was they were experiencing.
Well, you know, when you have had these kinds of experiences and it opens your mind and you see all the possibilities and you also happen to be a friendly kind of approachable person, it definitely draws others who want to tell you about what they also have gone through. And we know that alcohol is a nice little social lubricant. So how did all of this kind of evolve into mysteries over martinis?
Sure. Well, I used to work in a very large office, and I had worked there for 9 years. And so I was very friendly with most of the people there. And I was also a local to where I was from in Iowa City. And so I had this huge network of people who were coming to me with stories or just wanting to ask me and pick my brain about different topics. And even those who didn't really believe in the supernatural or paranormal would even just say, hey, just tell me one of your crazy stories, just because they found it entertaining. So at least there was this really good rapport going, a good positive energy. And in December, I actually moved away from Iowa City. My husband got a job elsewhere, so we're 2 hours away. And now I'm here, and I don't know anybody. I literally don't know a soul. And I had a lot of those coworkers and friends from my home. hometown. So you need to write a blog. You need to write about these experiences because there's so much to learn, and your stories are really great, and we love listening to what you have to say, and it's kind of a way to keep connected. And so I kind of, you know, would joke around about how I felt like I was this paranormal therapist for people. You know, they would come to me asking questions or who can I talk to about this, you know, about investigating my home, and I would try to find them local investigators to reach out to, you know, ones who were reputable and wouldn't charge them. And so that's kind of how this started, was I thought, well, what would be my prescription for someone who's had a terrifying experience? I know I'd like a cocktail, you know, and it was kind of this joke to kind of soothe the soul and the nerves was, you know, just let's kind of merge the two together and do a mystery-themed cocktail along with a story.
So we've got about a minute until our first break, but for people who have not been to your website, mysteriesovermartinis.com, tell us a bit about the setup. What's the format for you?
Sure. Well, I start with a mystery-themed cocktail. So I find real recipes, but then I try to do either a play on the words or I try to construct something that has to do with the topic at hand. And then what I do is after that recipe, I will write, you know, either an article about a phenomena or I will actually, I've just recently started to recount people's stories who have given me permission to, you know, tell about their encounters or phenomena that they themselves have encountered and just explore it in the theories and possibilities of what it could be.
And how many of these blog posts do you have up so far? Do you know the number?
I believe it's 11, hoping to have a 12th one up tomorrow.
Okay, well, so that goes to show then this is still a new, fresh idea, but people are buzzing about this all over the Internet, and we are going to go ahead and take our first break. But let me remind everyone, if you go to mysteriesovermartinis.com, you can see the atmosphere that Lisa Lloyd has created. And last hour I gave an example of one of her recent posts where basically she gives you the ingredients for what's called hypnotic eyes, which is a drink that has 2 ounces of hypnotique, 1 ounce of blueberry vodka, splash of lemonade, 2 blueberries, sprig of mint. And then she goes on to talk about the story of the black-eyed kids. Well, when we come back, we'll ask her to tell us the story of the black-eyed kids, and we'll dig into more of her favorite mysteries. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual, where we talk about the amazing, the extraordinary, and the downright weird, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. Speaking of strange, we'll be back right after this.
Do you think you can tell? They get you to train.
Yeah, Mysteries Over Martinis. What a concept, huh? Sounds good, doesn't it? sounds a little bit classy, almost like some evening in an old English study. And that is the name of Lisa Lloyd's popular new blog, MysteriesOverMartinis.com. You'll find a link at SpeakingOfStrange.com, as well as a link to Wright's Coin Shop, the place where your money becomes more money. And I'm Joshua P. Warren, your host on Speaking of Strange. Lisa Lloyd is joining me this hour of the show. And Lisa, before we get into some of these interesting stories, you know, I have a lot of ghost tours that have been running for many years in Asheville, North Carolina. And, of course, I have the Asheville Mystery Museum there. And one of our popular tours is an Asheville pub crawl, a haunted pub crawl, where we take people from bar to bar and they get to imbibe in spirits as they hear stories about spirits. And I've always been intrigued with the sort of relationship between alcohol and the paranormal, and the fact that, well, we call high content alcohol substances spirits because there's a direct connection there historically. Do you have any thoughts on that connection?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I guess I hadn't thought about that. No, I don't know if maybe it has something to do with, you know, I as much as I hate to admit it, I've partaken in too much alcohol at times, and I've never hallucinated. You know, I've never had that. So when people would ask people, oh, you saw a ghost, were you drunk? You know, it's just like, well, I mean, I've been drunk before. I never hallucinated anything. But I kind of wonder if sometimes just being at that point where you've loosened up a little bit, and that you're just a little more open and free, if that maybe creates a certain energy or, what do I want to say here, but basically just creates all these elements that open a door or a gateway to allow something through, because you've kind of let your guard down. Your mind is a little more relaxed than it usually is. You don't have that filter like you normally would after a few cocktails.
Yeah, you know, I've always thought it was funny when somebody reports something paranormal, and then inevitably somebody else makes a comment like, "Oh, you know, maybe they've been taking a little nip here and there." Because I am from Asheville, which they call Beer City, and then the other place where I spend most of my time is Puerto Rico, which is the rum capital of the world. So I am no stranger to alcohol, and if drinking to excess is all it takes to see ghosts and UFOs, I'd be seeing them very frequently, but unfortunately, that just doesn't do it. But now let's talk about some of the stories that you have explored so far. Let's get back to the Black-Eyed Kids.
Okay.
For people who have no idea what the Black-Eyed Kids are, tell us a bit about this phenomenon.
Well, the Black-Eyed Kids, these stories started to really circulate around the 1990s, and the report is that these creepy children, it's either usually a single child, but mostly in two or three, groups of two or three, that they have been showing up unexpectedly, whether it's at someone's home or at their car, and that their goal seems to be that they want to be invited inside, that they're trying to gain access either into your car or into your home. On a few occasions, they've even tried to lure people to come with them, but most of the time, they are described as having pale skin, more pale than usual, that their eyes are completely jet black, that there's no sclera, there's no iris, you can't differentiate, the whole eye is black. Some people report a smell of either like rotting meat or sulfur, and that they're usually dressed even one of two ways. Either they're in plain clothes that almost seem old-fashioned and out of date, or that they're always wearing a hoodie, sweatshirt, and like jeans or, you know, or some sort of nondescript apparel. And so I guess one of my favorite stories, since you're on an island, now I can freak you out a little bit, was about a newlywed couple who was on their honeymoon, and they decided to take a nice romantic moonlit walk. And they hadn't gone far. They had only been out a few minutes when they noticed a little girl up ahead in a white dress, and she was motioning to them to please help me. She just kept repeating that, please help me. And the couple approaches her and asks what's wrong, and she just repeats, please help me. And again, the couple tries to get her to answer as to what the issue is, but she just keeps beckoning them. And so they follow for a short bit, and she starts to turn and go into the ocean, but yet continues to call for them to help her. And at this point, you know, they're kind of feeling something's weird. Something's not right. And so the wife says, you know what, we're just going to go ahead and call for help. And she starts to go towards them and still call, you know, like, no, please come with me. And as she gets just right under the moonlight, they can see that her eye is completely solid black. And this definitely sends them into a, you know, fight or flight position. So they start bolting back to their hotel. And they realize that not only are their footprints the only footprints in the sand, there's none of a child, but that they are way further away from their hotel than they should have been in the few minutes that they had walked. So that's one of my favorite accounts of that, where she's trying to lure them into the ocean. And, you know, and most people say that this will only happen once. There's never really been reports of a repeat. It always just seems to happen once, and then that's it.
You know, over the years, I've always been interested in these stories of apparitions that are eyeless. For example, the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall is perhaps the most famous eyeless ghost. And when people encounter these figures, these phantoms, I mean, when they look them right in the face, what they see are just black, empty sockets. And that really freaks them out. And yet when it comes to the black-eyed kids, it seems like maybe they give the appearance of having eyes, but the eyes are just completely black. Now, when it comes to trying to understand, you know, why that is, they say, well, the eyes are the windows to the soul. Maybe when you lose your soul, you lose your eyes. But do you have any sort of thoughts on how eyes sort of connect to the idea of a spiritual entity?
Oh, I completely agree with what you just said. In fact, that's in my article, you know, that many people say exactly what you said, that it's the window to the soul. And, you know, so there's a thought that, yes, that these are either people without souls, you know, who lost their soul somehow, or that these may even be demonic entities taking the guise of a human. And that it's also said that demons, when they try to manifest as a human, there's always something off. They're never able to completely manifest in a whole human form. And so perhaps the eyes is what, you know, that they try to get away with, because if it's dark out, maybe you won't notice that part. So, you know, a lot of people think these are demonic entities. Some people believe these are tulpas, which are just, you know, maybe there was some sort of horrific story that, you know, urban legend that went around, and so much energy was contained in it that it actually was created. There's a lot of thoughts about what these are. I really don't know what to believe, but I definitely know this one was a little bit more, I don't usually get scared too easily, but this one definitely kind of hit a nerve for me. I kind of found myself, you know, when I was out letting my dogs out at night, kind of looking over my shoulder and being like, I do not want to encounter them, you know. So they're definitely something terrifying. But I did, in my research, come across an article, and it was actually about a young woman who had reported seeing a woman with these dark hypnotic eyes. She called them black eyes. And it was just a really strange story. It was from 1903, where this high school girl claims that she was going to school and that this woman would be standing outside. And she said her eyes just kind of hypnotized her. And one day she commanded her to go home and pack her things. And so she did, and she went with the woman, and they went to the train station, and there they met a man, and that she just felt like she was under a spell the whole time, and that when she got to actually Cedar Rapids, which isn't too far from where I live, that she came to her senses, and that she was, you know, trying to get away, and she did get away and ended up coming back home, but she did not want to talk about the experience. She was terrified by this experience. So this does go back to 1903, so it's kind of interesting that there is some sort of piece of evidence that maybe something was going on a long time ago, but people may just not have brought it up until recently, or perhaps maybe they went away and something resurfaced them.
Okay, fascinating. We'll take a break. When we come back, I will ask Lisa, as a person who's had a near-death experience, what does she think the demonic is all about? And also, if she could have the solution to one mystery, what would it be? I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. Mysteries over martinis. Sounds like a fun evening out, doesn't it? Well, you should go visit our guest blog. It's mysteriesovermartinis.com. There is a link for you at speakingofstrange.com. My name is Joshua P. Warren, and I am your host. And you can also visit there a link to Wright's Coin Shop. And you can call Wright's Coin Shop as well, 828-298-5402, 828-298-5402. Talking with Lisa Lloyd, and, you know, she's the creator of Mysteries Over Martinis. And she once had a near-death experience. Now, fortunately, it was a positive experience. She saw the proverbial white light. And, yeah, Lisa, you have made a few references to possible demonic activity when describing the black-eyed kids. So do you think that maybe you got a glimpse of, dare I say, quote-unquote heaven, yet under different circumstances you could have had a hellish experience? Or how do you think demons and the demonic tie in to all of this?
Yeah, I think that there's always a balance to everything, you know, whether it's good, bad, black, white. So I just feel like you can't have angels without demons. You know, you just can't have the positive without the negative. So I feel like if you're a good person and that you are careful not to invite them in, and I think some people do it not knowing what they're doing. You know, after the fact with the whole Ouija board experience, I hear all these stories now about people, that's how they invited it in. Now, I'll be honest, I was with, you know, our family's very Catholic. So they insisted that we do a prayer before it, and I thought, okay, yeah, you know, that's great. And we did this prayer, and we had a white candle burning. So I think, in a way, that was kind of us saying only those who walk in the light were welcome, and I've never had a negative experience. But I think sometimes if you're messing around, goofing off, you know, trying to provoke Satan or whatever, you're opening that door maybe not knowing, and it's not intentional. But I think it is a way to invite something very negative in, whether it's a negative spirit or a negative or a demon. So, yeah, I believe that they are very real. And I think that maybe those who have done a lot of negative things in their life and maybe even have some apprehension about being judged may find themselves in a hellish situation. And perhaps if they return from that, that that is their way of being shown, if you don't change your ways, this is where you're going to end up. You know, that maybe some people get the second chance given to them.
So now, as a person who is intrigued enough by mysteries to create a whole blog, and it seems like sort of devote your life now to exploring these things, if you could just pick one mystery that you could know all the answers to, what would that mystery be?
That is a great question, and I was thinking about it during the break. And I think that a lot of phenomena could be explained due to interdimensional things, bleed through. And if I knew that that existed, that we were sharing space with another dimension, you know, even though we can't see it, I feel like that would explain a lot, and it would give validation to the fact that why people see Bigfoot and his, you know, footprints suddenly disappear, and he can't be found, and there's no, you know, there's no bodies, there's no, not a lot of substantial evidence. To me, that kind of explains that. And so it's not that people aren't telling the truth, or, you know, or that they're, that, you know, people are like, oh, that doesn't exist. Well, it may not, it, they may both be right. It doesn't exist on this plane, but that person who saw it really did see something. You know, so I think for me, that would be something I'd really want to know, because I feel like it would kind of be all-encompassing to a lot of strange phenomena.
And when you started your blog, Mysteries Over Martinis, what was the first case that you opened with?
The first case I opened with was one of my own, which was a dream visitation I had. I felt like if I was going to, you know, investigate these different phenomena, and I needed to put myself out there. And it was a little bit tough to be that exposed, you know, on the Internet. And but it was something that really was pretty prominent to me in my life. And it was about a dream visitation from a classmate who had passed away about 16 years before I had the dream. And if you'd like to, I can tell you about it.
Yeah, sure. Please do.
Okay. So when I was in seventh grade, I had a classmate named Tom, and he was pretty much an outcast. You know, he'd come with the death metal T-shirt and the ripped-up jeans, and he had a really ruddy complexion, and his hair was all crazy. And he just wasn't well-liked. He was picked on a lot. But Tom was always very, very nice to me, and likewise, I was nice to him. And one day we were in class, and our teacher wanted to do these brain teasers to stimulate our minds. And he had this photo up on the projection screen that we used to, you know, that they used to have. And on it was a photo of a glass bottle, and inside of it was a penny. And the question was, how do you get the penny out without breaking the bottle or pulling out the cork? Well, I was very shy back then, and so, you know, I wouldn't dare raise my hand. So I leaned over next to Tom, who was sitting next to me, and told him, you know, you push the cork in. So he raised his hand, and he answers it, you know, and it's correct. And I kind of elbow him jokingly, like, hey, you know, you stole my thunder. And he said something that haunted me for a long time because it was such a weird response. And he said, just let me have this. You have your whole life to be right. I guarantee your life will be much longer than mine. And the smile disappeared from his face, and he turned and looked away from me, and I just thought, what an odd thing to say.
Yeah.
And 3 years later, he had died of an overdose. And it really bothered me. He was the first person I knew who was my age who had died. I never had questioned whether or not there was an afterlife, but I wondered, you know, is he stuck? Does he even know he's dead? Has he gone to a better place? And I really got consumed with what happened to him. So I remember I wasn't really a religious person. Like I said, we have a Catholic family, but I was never real both religious, but I remember saying a prayer. It was one of the first times I really remember saying a prayer and saying, you know, I just hope that he has transitioned and that he's at peace and that his family finds their way through this. So fast forward several years, and my husband's in the National Guard, and he was gone doing an annual training exercise. So I was by myself. And we had just moved into a new house, and he wasn't even there when we moved. So I was under a tremendous amount of stress. So I remember I was doing a lot of meditative things. I would shut my electronics off at night, and I would just sit in silence, and I had started to sleep really well. And one night I had this dream that there was a, what I'll call my companion, because I never saw this person or entity head on. It was always out of the peripheral, and he was very tall and all dark. And we're in this amazing city, and the streets are immaculately clean. Everything is very geometric, lush green grass everywhere and foliage. And I remember being just taken by the city. I just can't believe how amazing it is. And so we start to cross the street. And as we cross the street, there's two men standing in the lawn of this big concrete square building. And my companion motions to one, and he motions back. And as I'm taking all this in, I kind of realize suddenly that my companion's no longer with me. He is over in this grassy lawn speaking to another man who, again, I did not see. He was just a tall, dark figure. And as I'm kind of looking around, I notice the second man who is standing in the lawn is approaching me. And when our eyes meet, I immediately know who it is. But now Tom is no longer 16 years old. He is an adult, and his skin is flawless. He's smiling. He's dressed very classy. He's got, you know, brown leather shoes, designer jeans, a black pea coat, or I'm sorry, a navy blue pea coat, and just looks fabulous. And I said, oh, my God, what are you doing here? And he smiled and said, hello, Lisa. And we just walked down the sidewalk side by side, and I just remember feeling very at peace. And we didn't really say anything. And once we got to the end of the sidewalk, he turned and he looked at me. And he said, I just wanted to say thank you for caring. You cared when not many people did. I don't want you to be sad. Everything happened the way it was supposed to. I'm very happy. And he goes, I just want you to enjoy your life. And then he put his hands on my shoulders, and he leaned in, and he said, maybe in another time. And then he didn't finish. He just leaned in and gently kissed me on the lips, and he turned around and walked away. And as I turned to look at him, he literally disappeared, and then I woke up. And I remember feeling very, very emotional when I woke up because I remembered all those details. And I usually remember my dreams, but not like that. And, you know, I could have lobster claws for hands in a dream, and it makes total sense. But this time I saw him, and I knew he should not be there. You know, so it was very real to me, and I knew that it was a very poignant moment for me and that I felt like he really did visit me.
Wow. You know, it's amazing how sometimes you have dreams, and I'm a very vivid dreamer. I mean, every single night I dream vividly. And you will know, okay, this is obviously some type of amalgam of different things I've been experiencing that I've put together, I've sort of mashed up, and I'm processing them. Or maybe you have some kind of a scary dream, and it's because you just watched a scary movie. There are times when you can isolate the source, but there are other times when you have an experience in that state, but you know it's just not something that you're generating. It's almost like you've gone outside your body, and you have experienced some astral realm. So that's fascinating. We're going to take a break. When we come back, gosh, it's already the last segment of this hour, but I would like to ask Lisa a couple things. Number one, well, what is her favorite martini? And number two, does she have any kind of events in her mind, maybe even something planned? Because I can just envision an evening called Mysteries Over Martinis that a lot of people would just love to attend. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. This is Speaking of Strange.
And we are in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange, presented by Wright's Coin Shop. I am Joshua P. Warren. Mind you, next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. And it's deep into safe harbor. That's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial news and stories, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended, so you can determine whether or not you want to stay tuned in for that. Right now, I'm wrapping up my conversation with Lisa Lloyd, creator of MysteriesOverMartinis.com. And Lisa, what is your favorite martini?
Well, do you mean on the website or just in general?
Well, and actually, let's broaden it. How about favorite cocktail in general?
Ooh, favorite cocktail in general.
Yeah.
I do tend to like a lemon drop martini, something that's kind of sweet but citrusy. So I would say that's probably my favorite. But, you know, I tend to lean towards anything kind of sweet and fruity. So, anyway, I like that. But the Hypnotic Eyes is probably my favorite drink on the website, the one that's because it's got lemonade, blueberry vodka, very summery. I love it.
When I get back to Asheville, where we have just craft bars out the wazoo, I'm going to go into a craft cocktail bar, and I'm going to ring them that recipe and order that one up. So now, it seems to me, Lisa, that your concept of martinis and mysteries easily lends itself to an event. You know, you get together for an evening, and you have a dinner, and who knows, maybe you have a mentalist or something like that, and everything sort of is centered around the idea of a martini party with some mystery incorporated. Have you done anything like that, or have you thought about it?
I haven't, but that's a fabulous idea. I love it. No, it hadn't even occurred to me to do something where, you know, live action, real people, you know, it's all been virtual at this point, but I love that idea. I think it would be a great way to get people to come together, and, you know, everyone loves to have a cocktail. You know, you feel like the epitome of class, and just, you know, be able to, you know, and that's really why I did this, was to open a dialogue, have conversation. I truly believe that people are experiencing things. Yes, I believe people create hoaxes, and I believe that not everybody's telling the truth, or, you know, they may suffer from mental illness, but I think that there are just so many stories out there that have come from very credible sources that I just have a hard time discounting everything. And I think people are experiencing something, and there's something reassuring knowing that other people are experiencing, you know, odd phenomena. So I really like that idea, you know, and maybe if they loosen up, they'll share more than we expect.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I get back in Asheville this fall, let's get in touch, and hey, maybe we can brainstorm and put together something fun one night.
Oh, that would be amazing. And yeah, I plan to make it back to Asheville at some point in the near future. I don't know when, but hopefully it'll be when you're there and not, you know, in the sun, taking it all in with the rum.
I'm going to try to get my tan on before then. Okay, so now we are almost out of time, but tell us again, aside from going to MysteriesOverMartinis.com, is there anything else that you'd like to tell listeners who want to learn more about you and your work or submit stories to you, et cetera?
Absolutely. MysteriesOverMartinis.com, and there is an about page and a contact page. So if you want to learn a little bit more about me, you can go there. It's really easy. It's mysteriesovermartinis@gmail.com. I would love if any of your listeners have a story they want to share. I won't use their name if they don't want me to, but I love being able to, you know, spread the word of here's someone's, you know, encounter with this. And, you know, just being able to, you know, flush it out a little bit, maybe ask the questions that people haven't bothered to ask and just see what kind of response I get. So, yeah, if people have a story they'd like to share, I'd love to hear it. And I am at just Lisa Lloyd on Facebook, so you can find me there as well and then friend me. I'd love to hear from you.
And Lloyd is spelled L-L-O-Y-D, right?
Correct.
That's right. Lisa Lloyd, L-L-O-Y-D. Well, you know, Lisa,
hey, it's one of those just, you know, logical concepts that nobody quite put together until you did. So Mysteries Over Martinis, it's classy, it's got the right atmosphere, and there's a lot of fun potential there. So I'm glad to see all the success that you're enjoying and all the people who are visiting from all over the world, mysteriesovermartinis.com. And I have a feeling we'll be working together on some fun projects in the near future. So, hey, congratulations, and thank you so much for being on Speaking of Strange tonight.
Thank you, Joshua. It would be an honor to work with you. So thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure. Well, there you have it, folks. Lisa Lloyd, mysteriesovermartinis.com. Now, coming up next, we have, yes, the Dark 30 Hour. We tell everybody it's not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended, but you can decide whether or not you want to tune in for this. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. This is Speaking of Strange.